I mean, we wanted to show that the monodromy matrix from some path, this is my path P, I want to show that this is independent of the path. So I made a mistake in the derivation of this, so let me explain how it really goes. So we take some path, I start with the greater, and then some variation of it. It's like the same, but call these points, say, A and B. So the way this path ordered exponential works makes it clear that when I stick two paths together, I'm just going to be multiplying the monodromy matrices using matrix multiplication. So the monodromy matrix P is the monodromy matrix for minus infinity to A times the monodromy matrix for the path A to B times the monodromy matrix for B to infinity. And here we're using matrix multiplication. Now, the monodromy matrix for P prime has the same first two terms, but the second term, I'll just draw it like it's the one for this little piece of a rectangle times the monodromy matrix for B to infinity. So what we have to check is that these two middle terms are the same. Now, these are matrices, so I can take this matrix, I can multiply both sides by the inverse of this matrix, and bring this over here. So, I want this to be the identity. So delta ij. So I want to go through this a little quick because it's not like. It's not, you know, absolutely central for this course, but it's some kind of general thing everybody should know. So it turns out that when we multiply. When we concatenate paths, that's the same as multiplying the matrices. And when we do a path in the opposite direction, that's inverting the matrix. So we need to show that the monodromy matrix for this path is the identity matrix. So how do we do this? So this is where I made the mistake last time. Last time I said, oh, this is of order epsilon, and we pick out the order epsilon term, and that's going to be 0. But that wasn't really enough, because the order epsilon term will just be 0 for a stupid reason. And the interesting equation will come when we look at the order epsilon squared term. Or rather, if I assume that this side is delta, epsilon and delta, we'll find that the order epsilon delta term vanishes for an interesting reason. And the vanishing of this guy is in fact equivalent to the Lax equation. Okay, so how do we see this? So let's choose coordinates. Let's take my origin. This is my origin, 0, 0. This is the x direction. This is epsilon 0. This point here is epsilon delta. This point here is delta, is 0 delta. Now, I take my Lax matrix and I Taylor expand it. My Lax operator, L, I'm going to drop the group indices and I'll drop the spectral parameter index because that's not going to vary. We can expand it as L at the origin, 0, 0, plus x, L, 0, 0, plus y, del y, L, 0, 0, plus x, y, del y, L, 0, 0. Okay, this is just the Taylor expansion. And these are the only terms that will interest us. In fact, only these first two terms. So we're going to be interested in the integral of the path order integral of this Lax operator around this square. And we're going to use this approximation to see that, well, L is either constant or linear on each path by this Taylor expansion, and these higher terms are not going to be relevant. So for example, like what's the order epsilon term? Well, let's see. So what's the integral around the horizontal integrals? Where I just have one point and I integrate it along the horizontal lines. Well, on the bottom, so from this path here, I'll get epsilon, like the length of the path, times L00. So this one will give me epsilon L00, whereas this one, here, but here I'm going to consider I'm expanding around y is around delta. So I'll get two terms, this one and this one. So this path will give me epsilon times 1 plus epsilon L00, the minus sign, minus delta del y. Just because I've shifted this path up in the y direction, so I have to have this term where I differentiate it with respect to y. So these guys cancel. So this whole thing will become equal to minus epsilon delta del y L 0, 0. And similarly, the vertical integrals. Will give me plus epsilon delta del x L00 for the same reason. Because I have two integrals and one of them is shifted in the x direction, so I have to get a term where I differentiate with respect to x. And finally, so here we find two terms in the Lax equation, and there's one remaining term, the term where two copies of L are integrated. So the interesting one, I have my square. So I have two copies of L. So the term which will be interesting to us is that will appear at the order in the expansion we're analyzing is where one is integrated along a horizontal line and the other is integrated along a vertical line. So here, this will give me epsilon delta L 0, 0, L 0, 0. I apologize, I forgot to put in the indices. This is the x component, this is the y component. Lx, Ly. And here this is matrix multiplication. And of course there's another term where I go first up and then across. And if I take into account all those terms with the appropriate factors, maybe I'm missing a factor of 2. Depending on which one is first and which order and which direction the integrals are taking are taken, we get the products in a different order and with a different sign. So putting all these terms together, these cancel by the Lax equation. Okay. Any questions? No, absolutely yes. You don't have to take the trace. So it's like an identity of matrices. Yes, that was the mistake I made last time. I said there was a trace and there was should not have been a trace. So I suppose the thing I want you to understand from this is like when we do the path ordered exponential and you analyze the epsilon, the term proportional to epsilon delta is precisely the Lax equation. That's somehow its meaning. The Lax equation is I go around a square, I get back to where I started.
It's stating that the curvature is zero, right?
Exactly, yes. The curvature is zero, so you know. The meaning of curvature is that the holonomy around a square is the identity, or the order epsilon delta in a square of size epsilon delta. So I want to move on to a discussion of the operator product expansion. So let me explain why I want to introduce the operator product expansion. I'm sure you've seen it before, but it's always good to see things many times. Actually, the one secret motivation for some topics in this class is I feel like the most important thing you guys learn at Psi is quantum field theory. And I feel like getting some hands-on experience in computing quantum field theory is really important. You know, if you're in a quantum field theory course which has a giant amount of material to cover, you might not get much time on understanding examples in great detail. So that's what I wanted you to be able to do in this class. Okay, so the operator product expansions. Let me explain why I want to introduce this. So let me write down the Lax equation again. So here there's the commutator of matrices. So let me expand this out a bit. So Lx and Ly, these are n by n matrices. Whose entries are operators. in a two-dimensional quantum field theory. So and when we write something like Lx, Ly, or more explicitly, Lx, Lij, Zx, Ljk, Zy, what's happening is that we're multiplying operators, because each matrix entry, each Lij, is an operator. So classically, this is okay. The reason is that classically, the local operators at some point P are equal to the set of polynomials in the fields and their derivatives where I divide out by the equations in motion. So this is just, you know, because I have polynomials in the field, I can just multiply polynomials in the most naive way by putting them beside each other. And this is something where multiplication makes sense. Now at the quantum level, this is simply just does not work. Level. So the product of local operators is a singular quantity. It can be is singular, so it's ill-defined. So what is defined? Is the operator product expansion. So if I have two local operators, so these are just, you know, functions of the fields and their derivatives, say, so then the operator product expansion is an expression of the form I take one operator, and I place it at 0. So I measure my field at the origin. And I take my other operator, and I place it at x. So. So the other operator is some polynomial in my fields at x. And I can combine them and find an expansion in terms of functions of x and other operators at 0. These guys are local operators. At 0, these guys are functions of x. Questions? Yeah.
Why is it like a squiggle?
Yes. So this is an expansion valid for small x. So we can expand it, discarding terms with which vanish to some order at the origin. So personally, well, for me, the most important piece of the operator product expansion is that it's a singular term. So we can write it like this, plus non-singular functions of x. But you can, instead of doing this, you can say, you know, or we add on functions which vanish at the origin, or which vanish to second order, or vanish to third order. It's a bit like a Taylor expansion. The complicated feature of it is that in a general interacting quantum field theory, these functions can be completely crazy. They can be like not functions which do not have any expression in terms of classical log or exponential or polynomials. In a conformal field theory, these functions are all very nice. Okay, so what I wanted to explain really is how to compute this to leading order. Oh, and I should, just for completeness, I should explain the relationship between the OPE and correlation functions. So, now suppose we have three operators. And we take points, say 0, x, y, which are in or n, and I'm going to take y kind of at some distance from the origin. Then I can consider the expectation value. And, sorry, this is too high. So what we will find is, as x tends to 0, like this expectation value is just a function of these variables of x and y. With some poles when x is 0, x is y, or y is 0. Just some. So there's no operators anymore in this expression. Yes?
So why are there commas?
Some people write commas, some people don't. I don't know. Do you write commas for correlation function?
I've never done it.
OK. Let's see. So, but you guys must have studied correlation functions in the quantum field theory course, right? OK. So when x is really small, this thing here can be replaced by that sum. So this is equivalent to the sum of these functions of x. And now here we have a two-point function. Okay, so there's some choices what you mean by, you know, which terms you retain. For example, the way I like, you know, I'll be doing it is this is like up to non-singular functions of x. Now personally, I kind of much prefer the OPE to the correlation functions. Correlation functions are global. They depend on like a state at infinity. Or if you're working on a non-trivial manifold, kind of the global structure of the space-time manifold. Operator product expansions are local. So that is, they only depend on how the quantum field theory behaves near the origin. So this is really useful, right? So suppose you wanted to, like if you're studying a conformal field theory in two dimensions, people study the OPE to understand the OPE, to understand OPEs on any Riemann surface, you would only need to do it on flat space. And that would give you some very strong constraints on the correlation functions on any Riemann surface. It will tell you what their singularities are. Okay, so how do we compute these guys? Any questions? So let's do the following example. The 5-4 theory on Rn, on R4. So the Lagrangian is minus a half phi Laplacian phi plus integral 5/4 over some. The factors aren't important. So, but what will be important is that I'm going to put a 1 over h bar in front of this whole expression. And we're going to compute things to leading order in h bar. So h bar is a loop expansion parameter. So when h bar equals 0, I mean, remember, in the path integral, we're going to do some kind of exponential of this guy. When h bar is equal to 0, the thing appearing in the exponent is huge. It's kind of, we localize the critical points, so it's classical. So working in perturbation theory around h bar is working in perturbation theory around the limit where everything is classical. And in statistical mechanics, h bar is called the temperature, or inverse temperature. Inverse temperature. So we'll calculate to order h bar, and these are the rules for Feynman diagrams. So a propagator, so an edge, which is related to the propagator, this gets power of h bar. That's because the propagator is the inverse matrix to the kinetic term. The kinetic term has a 1 over h bar. So when I invert that matrix to compute the propagator, I get a h bar. The vertex, which is associated with this interaction term, gets a 1 over h bar. So the total weight is equal to the number of edges minus the number of vertices. So this is, you know, if it's a connected graph, those graphs which are trees will appear with the power of 1 over h bar. But there's a slight correction to this when we introduce operators. So let me explain. You guys should know what diagrams to write down when you're computing correlation functions. There's a similar thing when you're computing OPEs. So suppose I want to compute the OPEs of, for example, the operator phi 0 and phi of x. So here I'll put phi 0, here I'll put phi of x. I'm going to write down a typical diagram. So what we do is we sum over diagrams. With two special vertices, which are labeled by the operators we're inserting. And another thing which distinguishes these diagrams from something you might have seen before is there is some number of external lines . These external lines have no propagator. But instead, they're labeled by the field phi. Okay. So the result of this computation, once we stick in all the propagators, will be a function of phi, which is an operator. So I hope this will become clear in a minute when we write down the first examples of how to do this. Now, I should tell you how to do the counting, like which powers of h bar appear. So every internal edge has a h bar. And every internal vertex has a 1 over h bar. but the external lines and these special vertices do not contribute any powers of h-bar. The reason being that when we insert our operator into the path integral, this operator doesn't come with any powers of h-bar in it. So this diagram has, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This diagram is weight h-bar squared, is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 4, 4. Okay. So this way of counting things makes it really easy to figure out what can happen at first order in h-bar. And then we can just, you know, really write things out completely explicitly and do some integrals. This kind of thing can happen. Like this has a h-bar inverse. So this is a first order diagram. So anything where in the middle I have a tree will be good. And also, this kind of thing can happen. Let's count the powers of h-bar. There's two propagators, that's h-bar squared, and one vertex, so h-bar inverse. But, well, when we're considering the OPE, we're interested in singular terms. Now, in this diagram, these operators just don't even talk to each other. I can just move these, I can move this guy around, and it's never going to develop singularities, because there's no propagator, they don't, I mean, these operators don't exchange anything. So this guy, things like this will not contribute to the singular part. So the only diagrams that can possibly contribute are these very simple ones, which look like trees.
So in the first diagram, we have this two fields jutting out of the middle.
Yes.
So presumably, you know, this comes from some kind of, you know, perturbative expansion, right? Wouldn't they join up, or wouldn't they form a loop in the?
The diagrams in which these guys form a loop will contribute at higher order in h-bar. So what's going to happen here? I'll compute this diagram in a minute. We're going to see that the OPE of phi at 0 with phi of x will be something involving the operator phi squared at 0. It's a composite operator. So now we can enumerate all possible diagrams at first order in h-bar. So there's the simplest one where they just are connected by a propagator. This is the usual two-point function of a free theory. And the most general thing is where I mean, I get a bunch of these interior vertices in the middle of a line. So you can think of this, if you like, summing all, if you want to think in this way, summing all these up will give you the propagator in the presence of a background field, which is one way to think about it. But okay. Oh, and one more. Let's see. One more small point is you might wonder why I can't have diagrams like this. Where there's some tree stuck on. You can show that this guy does not contribute. The singularities of this guy, I mean, in general in quantum field theory, things coming from trees are non-singular. So the singular terms in this guy have already been calculated by these ones where I cut off the trees. So this is some kind of technical point I don't want to go into. But the important thing is you can just write them all out, and this is all that possibly can be. Okay, so let's compute these diagrams. So firstly, this one is very easy. Well, the propagator for the scalar field in four dimensions is 1 over 4 pi, 1 over x minus x prime squared. So I'm writing it in real space instead of momentum space. So this diagram gives 1 over 4 pi, 1 over x squared. So the first term of the OPE is that phi of 0, phi of x is going to be equivalent to h bar over 4 pi, 1 over x squared, times the operator 1, plus other terms which will compute. And this is the operator which does nothing. It's the identity operator.
Can you clarify again why the trees don't contribute to the similar part?
I think a fully satisfying answer would involve some thinking about effective field theory. I don't want to go into it right now. I mean, for instance, you notice that these guys will give you something. Let me say this. So like when I write phi of 0, that's an operator I've written in the UV. It's a function of the elementary fields. When I've done these computations, I've taken two operators and kind of integrated out some high energy modes to get an operator described in time in terms of kind of slightly integrated out fields. And then I'm going back, and then I'm trying to repackage that in terms of a UV operator. That repackaging involves stripping off these trees. It's a little technical. We can go more into it like some other time if you want. Okay, so this is the first one. Now for some exciting integrals. I mean, everybody loves integrals. Second diagram. Well, if you just write down what this gives us from the rules for Feynman diagrams, I'm going to integrate over this vertex. That's the integral over x prime. And then I'm going to have a 1 over 4 pi squared, because there was two propagators. And the first propagator will give you 1 over x prime squared, 1 over x minus x prime squared, 5x prime squared. So this is a function of this field. But it's a kind of a crazy function, because it involves taking my field and integrating over all space-time with respect to this kind of strange kernel. So it's, in particular, it's not a local operator, because it's involved integrating over all space-time. However, what the OPE allows you to do is to say that modulo non-singular terms, it is a local operator. So to see that, we expand. Just Taylor expand it. Phi of 0 plus x prime I del I phi 0 plus. If you insert this expansion into the integral, well, so you note, yeah, the total weight under rescaling of everything here, there's like a 4 on the top and a 4 on the bottom. But if I expand this out, we'll get things out. Integral d4 x prime 1 over x prime squared 1 over x minus x prime squared times pi 0 squared over 16 pi squared. It's the first term, and the second term is d4 x prime. We get a term involving the derivative phi at the origin. So all I've done is taken this Taylor expansion around the origin and stuck it into the integral.
So is it phi of x the first?
Let me write this on the other side, because there's enough room. Phi at the origin, del I phi at the origin, over 16 pi squared. Now, the thing you notice about this integral is, let's calculate how everything scales. On the top, I have a 5. On the bottom, I have a 4. This tells us when I integrate it, I'll get a function of x, which scales of weight 1. So this integral, just by looking at it like that, it's going to be roughly like x, which is non-singular. So this term just does not contribute. And by looking at, so by discarding these non-singular terms, you've vastly simplified the problem into just computing this integral. And this integral is roughly like pi 0 squared times some constant times log x. You can see it has to be a log because we have 4 on the bottom and 4 on the top. So. So the conclusion is that pi 0 times 5x looks like h bar over 16 pi squared, 1 over x squared times the operator 1 plus h bar times some constant. We didn't figure out the constant. It's a bit slightly annoying to figure out what precise multiple of log we find, times log of x times pi 0 squared plus OH bar squared. Okay, and all it turns out, if you use this kind of simple-minded dimensional analysis for all of these more complicated diagrams, they just don't contribute. There's some very silly thing. You just count how many things on the top, how many things at the bottom. And this is the complete answer to order h bar. Okay, any questions? I hope you guys can do these calculations. Yes.
If you are in 2D, would the trace contribute?
Pardon?
If you are in 2D, would the trace contribute?
The trace?
The trace that you ignored. Or no?
No. Okay. I mean, do you want me to try and explain in more detail why?
Yeah, I'm quite confused.
It's a really subtle point. I mean, I understand why you're confused. So the way it works is, so if you want to give me an operator in a quantum field theory, you will naively say, oh, an operator is a function of the fields. This is fine classically, but this is not correct. It's a bit too naive at the quantum level. You'd say, well, quantum field theory, looking at the UV is really kind of ill-defined. What you need to do is integrate out some high-energy modes. You get a whole family of effective field theories. So an operator is really an operator in each of these families of effective field theories. So what we're doing is we're taking two classical operators, viewing them as operators in these effective field theories, taking their OPE, and well, you notice the OPE vanishes modulo h bar, because at order h bar there's no singularities. So the order h bar contribution can be viewed as, again, h bar times some classical operator. What classical operator is that? Well, you've computed these diagrams, including the trees, will compute the kind of what I get from that classical operator by integrating out some high-energy modes. So to figure out which classical operator was originally, I run the order flow backwards. And that removes off those trees. So if you were to try to do this more carefully at the quantum level, you would say, I'll describe my operators in terms of some effective field theory. I'll write down the propagator for integrating out from infinity to some scale, put that propagator in, and I'll get some operator in that effective field theory. Then you can try to figure out, does it come from a UV operator? By.
So you see the diagram with the two pairs of legs coming out, you said that they don't contribute.
They don't contribute by dimensional analysis. So it's always the case that, like, if you were to do this in, say, 6 dimensions, you would find some finite number of diagrams, but then it just stops at some finite number.
have a Ubic cutoff for the intervals?
Say that again, sorry?
Do we have a Ubic cutoff for the intervals? Because if expand, like...
Do we have a Ubic... Well?
Because these intervals are not convergent, right?
These integrals? Yes, that's a good point. So what you're concerned about is an IOR issue, right? So these integrals fail to be convergent when x prime is very big. So what one should do is you choose an arbitrary IOR cutoff, and then you notice, yeah, so choose an IOR cutoff, like I'll say, well, I'll integrate over x prime in some ball. And then you notice that the singular part doesn't depend on the IOR cutoff, because if I vary which ball I integrate x prime over, that's going to be an integral where x prime is far away from 0. And therefore, this quantity is non-singular when x is 0. So that's another slightly delicate point. These integrals may not converge, but you'd always just choose an arbitrary IOR cutoff, and you won't find independent of that choice.